Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, this is going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course, we had our guest this evening is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, certainly one of my favorite guests. Dr. Cuddy has taught at the university level, was in the Department of Education during the Reagan administration, has testified before Congress. He's certainly one of my favorite authors and certainly one of my favorite researchers. You'll find his articles at newswithviews.com. You know, we carry his book entitled Cover Up, and of course his book on mental health screening, and his book on the road to socialism. They're all available from Radio Liberty. We carry his book on the timeline for the New World Order for education, or education in the New World Order, and his little pamphlet called Conspiracy. And we are hoping to get very soon back in print, and a number of his books are out of print, but back in print would be his Secret Records Revealed, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But right now, Dr. Cuddy, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Well, certainly let's get right ahead with the subject this evening. And of course, you'll find his writings at newswithviews.com, and they come out on a weekly basis. I suggest you pull them down, bind them, read them, reread them, study them. There's a wealth of information there you won't find elsewhere. So I'm just going to let you pick up the ball and run with it.
Okay, well, don't hesitate to put on your own valued opinion as well.
All right, fine, I won't.
The topic that I have up on News with Views is the communitarian influence on the Bible Literacy Project. And it's important for two reasons, not only the Bible Literacy Project, but this whole notion of communitarian has gotten a little bit of publicity, but not all that much, and it really is a little sneaky. It stands for something much broader than one would think. Now, I have a dictionary, a Webster's dictionary from about 35 years ago, and if you look at that, some of those dictionaries then will refer to it just as one word, communitarian. What does it mean? Communism. Now, I hesitate now to say that these people are, quote, communists, because I try not to put words in people's mouths, and so it may well be, if you were asked them, the communitarians, are you communists, they would make some sort of distinction. So what I want to do is just give a little bit of background as to what this attitude of communitarianism is. And basically what they believe is that the individual's needs and rights should be de-emphasized or at least balanced against the interest of the community or the society as a whole. And I'll give you several examples here. For example, the name that your listeners may remember is Henry Cabot Lodge. Well, George C. Lodge is a communitarian who a few years ago, and he's a relative of Henry Cabot Lodge, he's the son, published something called Managing Globalization in the Age of Interdependence. And he's a communitarian. He's also a Council on Foreign Relations member, trustee of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and so on. And in his book, this is somewhat typical, in this book that we can pick up after the break, he explains what his attitude is.
And I think what people have to understand what this is really all about. Either the individual is important or the community is important. If if the individual is important and you want to be free, then you limit the power of government. But if the community is important, then you expand their control over the individual. Well, why don't you go ahead and pick the story up there?
Sure. In this book, Managing Globalization in the Age of Interdependence, George Lodge claims that the old systems of governance centered on the nation state are inadequate. What they really have here is an erosion, he says, of national sovereignty that seems inevitable. And he advocates the transnational governmental mechanisms and so on, which is fairly typical of the globalist mindset that a communitarian would have. Something that your listeners may not actually associate with communitarianism is George W. Bush, the current president. And in that sense, once again, I would encourage your listeners to note that the Washington Post, shortly after President Bush, the current President Bush, entered the White House, published an article on February 1 of 2001 titled "Needed Catchword for Bush Ideology: Communitarian Finds Communitarianism Finds Favor," and in there it basically describes a new way of thinking. He talks about the president's actions and says they have less to do with what you would consider left or right, liberal, conservative, and embracing this movement known as, quote, communitarianism. And one of the people from the Clinton White House commenting on this when they asked him, Don Eberle, he was an advisor in the Bush White House, said that this is a favorite phrase of President Clinton, the third way, you may remember, and he's saying, Don Eberle, in the advisor in the Bush White House, says this is the ultimate third way. And communitarianism also can be known as what they call civil society. They're both have similar meanings. And what one wants to remember is that this is being pushed on several fronts. For example, you'll have academics like Robert Putnam of Harvard University, a leading communitarian thinker. And so the Post, Washington Post, would ask him what they thought of many of President Bush's early proposals, and he would say, oh yes, they fit right in with communitarian thinking. They also would look at his first inaugural address. A leading communitarian thinker is named Amitai Etzioni. He's at George Washington University. And he says, well, this first inaugural address is virtually a communitarian text. And he says you'll find all kinds of words in it like civility, responsibility, community. And he said that's really no accident because the advisors to President Bush writing that first inaugural actually consulted on that speech.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy was just saying that George Bush's first inaugural address already laid out the basic platform of communitarianism, and most Americans don't understand what this is about. But it is about the idea that we really do not want to stress individuals and individual freedoms. We want to stress community. And, of course, we do not want to support the concepts laid out in the Constitution, which limits the power of government over the lives of the people. We want to expand the power of the government over the lives of the people, because that's how we can provide them, these common people, with a better life. There is this elitist concept, this noblesse oblige. These people of great wealth and great power, and certainly whether it be Henry Cabot Lodge or so many of our university people, or really the people who have really billions of dollars at their disposal, who believe that they are entitled to rule. It's the idea of returning to an aristocracy. But you see, the Constitution gets in the way. The American Constitution limits the power of government over the lives of the people. How can you expand the power of government over the lives of the people and then transfer that power to the ruling elite, which was already a Platonic idea? Why, you sell it under communitarianism. We're concerned. You know, some people don't have any housing. The government must provide for it. Some people don't have enough food. The government must provide for it. Some people don't have health care. The government must provide for it. Look how expensive medications are. Well, we have to have a new drug program the government will provide and help people buy the expensive medications which are produced by the companies that the wealthy people control. People don't really understand that what this really is all about is a scam by which we give up our individual freedom to a ruling elite under this beautiful name of communitarianism, but it is basically communism. And the old, certainly the old dictionaries used to say that right out in the open, but we don't talk about that anymore. Anybody who thinks about communism obviously believes in black helicopters and a communist hiding under every bed. But these ideas of communitarianism are the antithesis of the American constitutional system, which limits the power of government over the lives of the people so men can be free and the ruling aristocracy, and of course so many of them are centered in the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Club of Rome and Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove. They really don't believe in these concepts of freedom, at least not for you and I. They believe in those concepts for themselves. But you and I must be regulated and regimented and controlled. After all, wouldn't we be much happier if they provided everything we need? And, of course, then they could redistribute the wealth and create a world utopia under their control. Would that be a fairly good analysis, Dr. Cuddy?
Sure. In fact, as you were talking there, I remembered, I won't go into it, that book 100 years ago, The Benevolent Feudalism. And the reason I'm bringing that up is this new approach that they have is to, as you said, to have this elite aristocracy, and they really don't want to be bothered with the middle class anymore. They want most of the people to be these lower worker bee serf types from the old days of feudalism. Now, why am I bringing that up? Because the fellow that wrote that book was a W.J. Kent. And he was the editor of the American Fabian, as in Fabian Socialism. And so what you find, to some extent, is whether it's the term the third way, or in this sense, communitarianism, they really, in some sense, lean towards that sort of socialistic notion. Now, as soon as I say that, somebody will say, what are you saying, that President Bush is a socialist? Well, again, I don't want to put words in his mouth. He'd probably say no. But what you need to do is measure their actions. And so you would look at what President Bush has done in education. Well, we have no child left behind. Well, what is that exactly? It's a massive transfer of authority away from the local level to this larger community, the nation level, the federal government. It's a major transfer in that sense. Many other things you will find that he endorses have this sort of shift, these mental health screening under the rubric of health. Policy will be set at the national level that will help you. You know, it's always presented as for your own good, but what this is really sort of a massive power shift away from the individual or locality or the city towards a higher level, sometimes the state, but in many cases now the federal level. And President Bush has been moving in that direction in many cases. And so that was the Washington Post describing this philosophy that he has of communitarianism. And just before the break, I was mentioning that this first inaugural address that he had given not only sounded, as Amitai Etzioni said, who's a communitarian, he said it sounded like a communitarian text full of the key words. But it wasn't really an accident that that happened, because his advisors, the people around President Bush, actually consulted with this Robert Putnam I mentioned earlier, this Harvard University leading communitarian thinker. And you'll find other people involved in this area. There's, I believe, a former Indianapolis mayor, Stephen Goldsmith, speaks in these terms. And so you'll find this, sometimes they'll say civil society rather than that. So I wanted to stress here is that this isn't just politics. It involves many, many aspects of life, including religion. And in this case, I'm focusing on the Bible Literacy Project, because it's sort of an interesting example of how the powers that be want to have this sort of this philosophy affect all areas of life. It's like we've mentioned before, when Henry Kissinger had been with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund back in the 50s, and they had this mid-century challenge published, as they called it, and it said that in the future they would have this burden which they would accept, to prepare a, quote, new world order, and they specifically mentioned the first one was spiritual, and then it went on politics, economics, so on. But the first thing they mentioned was spiritual, because that's a key element in all of this. And so when you look at the Bible Literacy Project, this is an interesting organization. I'll just give a bit of background. What they're trying to do is get primarily their textbook, which is titled The Bible and Its Influence, in as many schools, public schools mainly, but private schools as well, any Christian schools that want it. But there's a big push by these people to get that textbook into as many public schools around the nation as they can. Even some of their allies down in the state of Alabama tried to, and probably will try again, to get it mandated that if a student in that state chooses, you know, voluntary choice, to take a course in the public schools on the Bible, that they would have to use this particular textbook. And so what I've tried to do in this current News with Views column is look at, first of all, who are these people who are the advisors, the board of advisors, the board of directors? And you find something rather interesting when you look at that. About half of the original advisory board of this Bible Literacy Project are self-proclaimed communitarians. And so the first thing I did was ask myself, just like with that Robert Putnam consultation for President Bush's first inaugural address, I said, can this be by accident? If you had a book, let's say that you wanted a cross-section of people in the country to advise you on this Bible course that you were going to have in public school, you would think what you would do is say, well, let's give a really, you know, broad range. Let's have a Presbyterian, a Baptist, a Catholic, a person who's Jewish, and, you know, on down the line. And so I just can't believe that half of the board, the advisory board, is communitarianism, communitarian by accident. You wouldn't get, you know, half of the board, say, Presbyterian by accident. So there seems to be some desire here, at least, to have that bearing on this. And so what I found was that the communitarian advisory board members, if you start looking at them, a couple of them, for example, Jean Bethke Elstein and Marianne Glendon, along with one of their board of directors, who's also a communitarian, his name is David Blankenhorn, signed something called the Responsive Communitarian Platform. And this is what it states. It's just a simple statement here. Quote, there is little sense in gun registration. What we need to significantly enhance public safety is domestic disarmament. We join with those who read the Second Amendment the way it was written, as a communitarian clause calling for community militias, not individual gunslingers, end quote. In other words, what they're saying here, these communitarians, they believe that you, the listener, as an individual, have no Second Amendment right to bear arms, to have a firearm. And so they're looking at this as a communitarian or larger society issue rather than, as Dr. Stan said earlier, the individual rights. Then I looked at another advisory board member who's a communitarian, named Mark Gellman, G-E-L-L-M-A-N, writes a fair amount of time for Newsweek. And if you look at his June 29 column of 2005, it was about the upcoming July 4th celebration, June 29, just, you know, a week before July 4th. And he said, quote, let us celebrate not the documents, for example, Declaration of Independence of our freedom, but rather, quote, it is the communitarian decision of freedom I will celebrate this weekend, quote, and we'll pick that up after the break.
And I think it's really so important that people understand there really are people who have a different view of the world. But these people work in concert, they work within the shadows, they conceal their true goals and objectives. And their true goal, of course, is the destruction of individual freedom and bringing all mankind under the control of government, under the control of government regulations. They will regulate every aspect of your endeavor, because after all, they are the elite, they know what's best for us, and you common folks are incapable of managing your own affairs. Well, our guest this evening is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and Dr. Cuddy, you pick up the story from there.
Okay, well, The reason I gave that particular example by one of the Bible Literacy Project's advisory board members, Mark Gilman, is that at first it sort of sounds reasonable. He's saying, let us not celebrate the documents, you know, such as Declaration of Independence, but the communitarian decision of freedom I will celebrate this weekend. Well, if you stop and think about that a little more carefully, though, of course, on the surface level, what he's saying is correct. You know, I'm not going to celebrate a piece of paper, you know, just the fact that there's a piece of paper, because logically, Americans, the early Americans, would desire to have freedom, and then they would write, you know, they would write the actual documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, proclaiming that and providing the rights and so forth in it. So on the surface level, you know, it seems correct. But what you have to remember, though, is what he's doing is rather a subtle shift in thinking. Just the communitarian notion that he's saying, it is the communitarian decision of freedom I will celebrate this weekend. It actually misrepresents the fact that when Americans, the early Americans, decided to have freedom, leave Great Britain, declare our independence, and so on, these decisions were made as individuals. An individual American decided to join the ranks with George Washington and throw off the oppression of the British. And so the document that he sort of dismisses, let's say the Declaration of Independence as a document, is extremely important because it proclaims that individuals are given their rights by a creator God. You know, if you read it, you know, the wording there is very, very clear that both that there is a God, a creator God, giving, endowing us with rights, and the rights are to individuals. So you have an individual, let's say, freedom of religion. You as an individual have freedom of speech. You as an individual have right to privacy. You as an individual have the right to have property and own property as an individual. And so these freedoms and rights are not communitarian group rights, typical of the type that you would find in a socialist or communist country. So on the surface, you know, it sounds sort of logical. Yeah, I'm not going to celebrate the piece of paper. I'll celebrate the decision of freedom. But it's really a rather sneaky shift because he's calling it a communitarian decision, but actually it was more of an individualist decision. And that's important to note because the society like the United States has an extremely important emphasis on the individual, whereas you'll find other nations like the French Revolution, which came after ours, they emphasize the what we would call today socialism, but this larger communitarian thinking that society as a whole is more important than any particular individual. And so if you're moving in sort of a socialist direction, you want to shift the thinking of the country. You know, I won't think of myself as having a particular right to do something. Now, I'm going to digress a little, but it's important because it's contemporary. And your listeners have probably seen all over the news that the governor of Texas has said that girls should be vaccinated. Now, you know, we can get into the specifics of what he says.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought for just a moment or two. Dennis, as we bring all of our other stations right on back on board with us here. So hang on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Cuddy was simply pointing out the idea of the Declaration of Independence, and one of the communitarians said, well, I'm not going to celebrate that piece of paper, or, you know, that idea. I mean, basically, I mean, I'm going to celebrate these ideas of freedom, not the Declaration of Independence. Well, the Declaration of Independence, of course, is really what spells out the foundations of our freedom. That, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that to preserve these freedoms, why governments are instituted among men, deriving their authority from the consent of the governed. In other words, governments were created to preserve our individual rights, our God-given rights. Well, that is, of course, not what the communitarians believe. They believe that we should all be subservient to the state, and what's good for the state, for the majority of the people, that's the way we should, of course, be going. And Dr. Kennedy was going to bring up this whole idea of that being raised in Texas. Well, shouldn't the government be able to require that every little girl be forcibly vaccinated for the common good? So you pick up the story there, Dennis.
Well, right. That's exactly the point. It's on the surface, it looks like, well, here's the governor, and you know, there's some research, and this is a horrible disease that's being contracted, and there's a very large segment who may have it and not even know about it, and so isn't this a nice thing? But if you look at it as what it really is, it's establishing a larger precedent of you as an individual really can be overridden by this greater good of the society. And it's not really necessary to go into the specifics, but that's the way you should look at this. It's not just the governor is going to force these girls to have a vaccination. It's this larger principle that can the larger society, the group, and so on, decide to force you to do whatever? And in this case, it happens to be a vaccination. But the point I'm trying to emphasize is the shift in thinking. They're trying to shift you away from, let's say, the Declaration of Independence itself, spelling out, as Dr. Stan just said, your individual rights of freedom of speech and religion, privacy, property, and so forth, to this different way of thinking. That, well, you know, I may want certain things or need certain things, but golly, you know, I have to make that subservient to the greater good. And so what we have here with the Bible Literacy Project is that sort of shift that's occurring in this particular incident. Now, you might say that, well, okay, just because there's some Bible Literacy Project board members who are communitarians, that doesn't mean that the Bible Literacy Project and its textbook, The Bible and Its Influence, actually teach that. So it's one thing to have advisory board members who reflect a particular view, but that doesn't mean that's what's being taught through the textbook in the schools. Well, in the first place, you might question how that can be if they did not accidentally choose half of their advisors to be communitarians. But you know, let's look at that theoretically. So what you do is you actually look at the textbook and you find, well, sure enough, this type of thinking does show up. For example, on page 70 of the teacher's edition of the Bible Literacy Project, there's a person named Michael Walzer, W-A-L-Z-E-R, who wrote a book called Exodus and Revolution. It is said to, quote, provide a good summary, quote, of a particular lesson. So they're referring in the Bible Literacy Project's teacher edition to this fellow's book as a good summary for a particular lesson. Well, who is this guy? According to Wikipedia, quote, Walzer is usually identified as one of the leading proponents of the communitarian position in political theory. And so if you look at a book review that was done, and this was done, you know, this was done not by some right-wing group, but the Nation, which is a fairly left-wing publication, is doing this book review. It's by a Bernard Avishai of Walzer's book. So, you know, this is somebody on the right criticizing what's going on. This is somebody on the left describing it. His book, Exodus and Revolution. Avishai, reviewing it in The Nation, noted that Walzer said the biblical account of the flight from Egypt, quote, inspired such defenders of Lenin as Lincoln Steffens, end quote. In addition, Steffens wrote a book, well, actually it was a defense of Leninism in 1926, called Moses in Red. And after the break, we can pick that up.
And I think it's so vitally important to understand that there are really people who have a different worldview. I mean, they really believe that individual freedom should be suppressed, that we should all work together, being that sort of the Rodney King idea. Why can't we all get along together? Of course, Rodney King was a thug, and of course, was arrested repeatedly for violent acts, but this whole idea, you know, if we just could be subservient to the state, if we would give up our ideas of individual freedom, and couldn't the state always do things better? I mean, aren't the people in government smarter than we are? And I would like to suggest, you saw the end result of that in the Gulag, both the Chinese and the communist Gulag in Russia. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. What's wrong with the communitarian view? Well, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Or as somebody once said, absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And when you give all power to the state, why, of course, that power will be misused here in America today. We have more people in prison per 100,000 than any other nation in the world. Over 2 million Americans are in prison today. And by the time you look at those who are in parole and probation, you're probably looking at 4 or 5 million people. One in every 3 young black men is in prison, parole, or probation in America today. And yet they were trying to convince us, of course, that we are free. Well, we used to be free. We didn't have all the federal crimes that, of course, if you get, suddenly hauled up before the courts for a state crime, and, of course, you're proven to be innocent because you are innocent, they'll come back with a federal charge. We have no double jeopardy. You can't be tried twice. But, you can be tried in the state, and then you can be tried in the federal courts. And then, of course, if you are still proven guilty, then we can go after you on civil charges. Before it was criminal, now it's civil. We're going to get you one way or another, because we don't like you for whatever reason. You may be critical of the government. Maybe you don't want to be a communitarian. Maybe you want to be free. And unfortunately, little by little, step by step, while we are eroding those concepts that once made America the envy of the world, to the point where today America and what we stand for is hated in most nations of the world today. And this is a terrible thing, but this is all a result of the move away from these ideas of individual freedom under God towards these ideas that are being perpetuated today of all power being given to the state. And of course, behind everything that's going on are powerful spiritual forces. And until you begin to recognize that many of the people within the communitarian and other movements in America are energized by spiritual forces that worship a different God, it is impossible to begin to fathom so much of what is taking place. Well, we're going to be back here in just a minute or two with our special guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we'll be telling you how to get in touch with some of the material that he has written. And hopefully you learn so much by reading Dr. Cuddy's material. And, of course, it's available on the Internet at newswithviews.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy, you can get his material at newswithviews.com. Let me encourage you to go to that website, to pull down all the articles that are posted there, put them into a loose leaf folder, and read them and underline them and read them and underline them. I keep them all filed away because there's so much a wealth of information, but the most important thing are all the references that are there. Well, Dr. Cuddy's been talking about communitarianism, and of course, I've alluded to the spiritual force that energizes these people because they have a different worldview. They do not believe in America, the individual. They don't believe in individual freedom under God because they worship a different God. But you go ahead and pick up the story up, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. Where I left off before the break was that there was a book review in The Nation, a sort of leftist publication, about this book, Exodus and Revolution, by a fellow named Walzer, Michael Walzer. And in there it was talking about that Walzer said the biblical account of the flight from Egypt, quote, inspired such defenders of Lenin as Lincoln Steffens, end quote. And Steffens, he was one of the early muckrakers, as they were called, sort of the investigative reporters, had a 1926 defense of Leninism called, quote, Moses in Red. And that, too, is actually referenced on page 65 of the Bible Literacy Project's textbook. And so I'm asking myself, you know, if you're going to describe some movement and how it might be affected by some spiritual force or whatever, and you have a thousand different things you could apply, why are you doing this? I mean, out of all of the things they could have used, why does the Bible Literacy Project want to include anything connecting a defense of Leninism and Exodus from the Bible? I mean, why would you pick that out when you have this vast array of examples that you can give of how the Bible has influenced something? Here we're picking up Leninism and sticking that in the textbook as something referenced, in this case, on page 65 of the textbook. I mean, why would you do that? What kind of psychological manipulation is going on? Why are they trying to make that connection is one of the things that I'm trying to raise here. And so you can see that this influence is coming through all kinds of avenues. I've mentioned in some other columns that I've done about the work of Charles Haynes with the First Amendment Center, as it's called. He's a primary advisor to the Bible Literacy Project, although I noticed recently, since he's been criticized, they're trying to distance themselves from him. But he is listed as a reference, what you would find is a document called, quote, Religion and American Education, Rethinking a National Dilemma. This is by Warren Nord, and he's co-author with Haynes of the Communitarian Network's Education Manifesto, which is called, quote, The Relation of Religion to Moral Education in the Public Schools, end quote. So these two individuals work together, Warren Nord, who actually I went to graduate school with at UNC. We were both in the same dormitory. I knew him. So he and Haynes get together and lay out the communitarian approach to what really amounts to a social reengineering of the public school system to accept various things for the common good. And the reason I mentioned that in Haynes is that that's what Haynes has been doing. He and the Bible Literacy Project, his First Amendment Center Bible Literacy Project, got together and developed what they call the Bible in Public Schools, a First Amendment Guide. This was co-published by both of them. And what you will find is that what Haynes is doing and is congratulated for doing by the Bible Literacy Project is finding this common ground. That's what we want to do. You know, let's look at what we all have in common in this area. And so, you know, if we could just have these common values, and all of a sudden as I'm starting to look at these things, it rang a little bell in my head, and I remembered that John Dewey, the father of progressive education, who had said in 1929 that we're in for some kind of socialism, and may call it by something else, but we are, had written a book called A Common Faith. And that was the year right after he was one of the co-authors of the First Humanist Manifesto in 1933. And I remember further that Dewey earlier, in 1916, had written a book called Democracy in Education, where he said that if you are an independent individualist, you actually have a form of insanity. He said if you're a dependent person, you know, the society, the larger community, then you're fine. You know, if you're part of this larger group, you're fine. But if you're an independent individualist, you have this form of insanity. And he went, Dewey, after that, went over to the Soviet Union and loved it over there, what the Bolsheviks were doing, just the emphasis on the larger society. And he came back, and Dewey wrote it all up. And the NEA, National Education Association, made him an honorary president and so on. So it was this shift away from the independent individualist thinking that Dewey was trying to promote that resulted in this common faith, which is very similar to what Haynes and Nord have said. These common values, let's see what we all have in common. The problem with that is once you start to say, well, let's look at what we all have in common, then you start peeling off certain things like an emphasis on Jesus Christ, because obviously if you're talking about worldwide, Hindus don't worship Jesus, and so, you know, as a common value, that would be out. So it's rather an exclusive sort of thing. You start excluding things when you start shifting in your thinking to, well, let's see what we all have in common. You know, let's don't look at ourselves as independent individualists with our own particular religious view or spiritual view, but let's see what values we all have in common, and that's what we will all agree to live by, which harkens back to what I said earlier in the program about The fellow who said, I'm not going to look at this particular document, the founding document, it's this communitarian decision, this group decision that we made. And that's where the emphasis is. He should say, look, we made this decision as a group to have this United States, and you know, that's what's important, not, you know, these documents like the Declaration of Independence, talking about your individual rights and so on.
But don't you think that they will try to use a religion to say, well, after all, Jesus was a Marxist. He wanted to help people. He wanted to help the poor. I mean, he healed people. Isn't that sort of like socialized medicine? I said he was concerned about, you know, the fact that people didn't have any housing, and the fact that they, you know, that they did not have adequate money, and so certainly he wanted to create a more equitable and just society. And he saw, of course, how the money changers were corrupt, and so he sort of took after them. It's sort of like our bankers today that exploiting people. He couldn't stand corruption. It was one of the few times he ever would show. Anger. He was angry at the establishment, especially the monetary establishment. So this sort of almost makes Jesus like a Marxist. And do you think that they would try to utilize these ideas to undermine our belief in the Christian message?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've often heard that the Catholic liberation theology types We'll use that, you know, okay, sure, we want to preach Christianity, but we have to liberate these people first and, you know, feed them. And what's holding them back are these awful capitalists, and we need a revolution and so on. But when you look at what Jesus did, Jesus could have done certain things that he didn't do. In other words, when Jesus talks about helping the poor, he doesn't say, okay, I want you to have more taxes from the Romans, and then the Romans, with these taxes, will go out and establish some government welfare program. I mean, he doesn't do that. Jesus himself keeps talking about the individual responsibility, the moral responsibility each of us has as an individual to help the poor. If you see when somebody's poor, sure, you should help them. This would be a good Christian. But he's not talking about a socialist notion of we give to the government what the government says it wants, and then the government turns around and helps the poor. In fact, there's a classic part of the Bible where there's a man and a woman, and they were supposed to give a certain amount of property over to, you know, to the cause of the gospel being spread, and they decide to only give half. And I think it's Peter is talking to them, and when they only gave half, and at first the man falls down dead, and later the wife comes along and says, Peter says, here's the feet of your husband, and she falls down, and so forth. But why is that relevant to what we're talking about? Well, at the very first, when Peter is telling them, before each of them keels over, he says, and wasn't this yours to give? In other words, he's reinforcing the idea that you as an individual, or you as a couple, a husband and wife, had this property. We weren't forcing you to do this. You know, we, the government, or we, this religious group, wasn't forcing it. It was your choice, and you decided, and the problem was that they had decided and promised to do something, and they didn't fulfill the promise. But it wasn't, Peter wasn't stressing, you know, we, the religious group, are going to dictate to you what you can and cannot do. In fact, he was very grateful constantly toward the help that the Macedonians and others were providing for the apostles in Jerusalem. But there's always this notion, and Jesus always was stressing the individual action. It's almost close to a sort of group salvation or something. You know, well, I'm going to be saved. But it's not as an individual. I don't have this individual responsibility. Some people will say, well, you know, I gave it the church, so like I gave it the office or whatever, and so I, you know, I pay my taxes, and so that's it. And what Jesus and the apostles were stressing is, you as an individual will be morally judged. You as an individual should do certain things and not do other things. And so this, what they're trying to do, as you said, Dr. Stan, is sort of shift this, you know. The government knows the best. The government will decide what things are in the best interest of the community, and therefore can compel people, whether it's, you know, vaccination or more taxes or whatever it is. And so what I what I closed out this article with, the communitarian influence on the Bible Literacy Project, was there's a number of errors in this. It's not just the communitarian philosophy, and I won't go into all of them, but there's a number of specific errors in this textbook, The Bible and Its Influence, and we don't have time to go into all, but for example, they would say that Jesus used parables so that everybody could understand what he meant immediately, when that's actually false. It's both in Matthew and Luke, it's very clear that Jesus says to those other than his disciples, he talks in parables that, quote, seeing they may not see and hearing they may not understand. And they say most Christians and Jews don't believe in the literal translation of the book of Genesis. And, in fact, there are surveys saying that most or the majority of Christians do believe in that. And there are some other things. The book of Job has no clear-cut moral lesson. If you look at chapter 42, the last chapter of the book of Job, it clearly does have moral lessons. And so what I've emphasized here is at the end is that perhaps the Bible Literacy Project itself should read John 8:32, chapter 8, verse 32, which proclaims, quote, "The truth shall make you free," because what these people constantly do, and I'm flabbergasted, they say there are no errors in this textbook. This is the first edition of the textbook. There's no errors. And I told that to a librarian. This is at a public library. I said, well, these people say there's no errors. See, that's ridiculous. I mean, every book by Simon Schuster or whatever has some typos or something. And so for these people to constantly say there's no errors, is totally fallacious.
Well, don't you think, Freddie Dennis, that what they're trying to do is shape the mind of the child as far as the relationship to the Bible and, of course, towards God? Aren't they really trying to pervert their attitudes? Isn't this really a matter of indoctrination, not in Christianity, but to away from Christianity and the teachings of the gospel?
Well, what they do is it's similar to the National Training Labs. They had an idea of you unfreeze values, you change them, you refreeze them. So what you have to do if you're going to approach some school is you don't go in there and say, okay, all you kids, stop believing in Christ. What you have to do is shift the way of thinking, and then just simply through that way of thinking being shifted, you will come up with different values. It's like values clarification is a technique, is a shift in the way of thinking to break down moral absolutes, let's say biblical absolutes, to get people thinking in a different way, which would be in the public school situation ethics.
Now, don't you think maybe that, Chris, a lot of the parents would like to have their child have, exposure to the Bible in
right.
school, and the parent doesn't understand this whole thing is a scam, not to, of course, bring their child to an understanding of what Christianity and the Bible teaches, but to destroy their belief in pretty anything and move them away from this idea that we are directly responsible personally as individuals to God, out of the fact that we are part of this mass of individuals. We are part of the community, and of course, God, religion's all right, but the important thing is the community.
Right, and that hooks up to a large extent with another series that I had of News with Views columns, where it talked about religion and world government, because this thing is part of a larger plan here. I remember Charles Haynes, who I just mentioned briefly before, had a similar notion to this Bible Literacy Project. It was called Our Living with Our Deepest Differences earlier, and it was the same sort of common values, common ground. You know, they would look at the five pillars of Islam and so forth. And what they did was an undermining of what we would call the traditional biblical interpretation of things, such as the literal interpretation of Genesis and so on. And so it's a rather subtle thing, but it's extremely powerful, because most people today just look at things in terms of face value. You know, well, somebody says this, and okay, this is right or wrong or whatever. What they don't appreciate is that if you change the way of thinking, you've actually changed the outcome. Simply by shifting from moral absolutes, let's say, to situation ethics, you're going to change the outcome. Because now if the situation is dominating your decision, or in the communitarian sense, if the community good is dominating your decision, you will forego certain things. In other words, if the community needs your property, well, you'll just forego your right to private property because the community needs it. And so if you shift the way of thinking, then you're actually shifting the outcome. It's rather subtle, clever, but subtle and powerful. And so what they're doing in this sense is redirecting the way in which students think about the Bible itself and the teachings of the Bible. And so that's what you have to be careful of. And I would encourage any of your listeners, because they're trying to get in all 50 states, as many public schools as they can, any of your listeners should check with your local school board, a friendly member there, and see if their textbook selection committee is looking at this Bible and its influence, that textbook, and you really need to warn them about what they're up to.
And, of course, remember, these people are, in my estimation, are diabolical. They have a whole different worldview, and they want to use public education to actually indoctrinate your child in ideas that will basically undermine their faith in our Lord Jesus Christ. Because behind all of these movements is this powerful, powerful spiritual force who would destroy Christianity and bring about the worship of another God. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program.
Well, I would just once again stress to your listeners, so look at the News with Views columns that I have. The current one up there is titled The Communitarian Influence on the Bible Literacy Project. Read that. Look at the people involved, the advisory board members. Remember, this can't be by accident that half of them are these communitarian philosophy. Note that they're seeking this common ground, as they call it, and think about the implications of that. Watch out for it in your local school system, because they're trying to get in there. Sometimes they'll try to slip it in, saying that a school board member, let's say, decides that if you're going to have a choice, if you're going to have a course on the Bible, well, here's a good textbook, and they will bring up certain individuals who've endorsed it, but again, I've tried to look at the actual textbook itself, and I pointed out tonight the communitarian aspects of it, Walzer's references, Leninism, and so on, but also just the plain errors. What struck me initially out of this thing wasn't so much the communitarians, although I saw that, was just the plain errors, like I said about Jesus and parables. I used to teach U.S. history at UNC Chapel Hill, and if we had a book that said, let's put this in a communitarian sense, and George Washington was opposed to the Declaration of Independence. I mean, let's say that he was really a communitarian. We would not have accepted that book. I mean, that would be ridiculous. So if you have a number of plain factual errors, now, that's one problem. Number two, if they keep saying there's no errors, when everybody who looks at this thing knows there's errors, they have a problem with credibility. So, can you really trust them with whatever they're doing? And thirdly, I would just stress that a lot of times we tend to look at issues, as I said, on the face value. David Rockefeller says such and such, or somebody does such and such, or Bernanke with the Federal Reserve does such and such. And that's fine. That's fine, and we talk about that, we report it. There's this other thing, though. The shifting in the way of thinking is even more powerful than that, because as I reiterate, and remember this, I mean, it's difficult for most people to do this, but remember, if you shift the way in which people think about something, you're going to shift the outcome. They don't literally have to come at you and your child in the eighth grade or whatever and say, okay, Johnny, we want you to stop believing in Christ. They don't have to do that. If they can just shift the way Johnny thinks about the Bible, then Johnny himself will start thinking, well, maybe Christ really meant something else. Maybe he was a communitarian.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so very much. And our guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, a very important subject. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, if you'd like to get the complete text, a copy of the complete talk this evening, we do talk and cover some of the things in the break. So if you'd like to get the tape of this program, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, if you would hope that many of you out there would give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us. And you do that, again, by calling 1-800-544-8927. We really would like very much to get Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed, back in print. And we've actually added an index to it, and we've added an update to it, because it was originally published about 10 years ago. The publisher went out of business, and without, of course, the ability to republish so many of Dr. Kelly's excellent books. They're selling at fabulous prices up on the Internet. We want to get it down so that everybody can read these. So if you'd be interested in getting a pre-publication, a case of Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed, at a very nominal donation, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And for a donation of $149.95, you get a complete case of the books. You can give them away. You can, you'll be able to sell them. You can do whatever you want to. But we need to keep his books in print, and we can get Secret Records Revealed. We'll try to get The Globalist, and Now is the Dawning, and the other key books. Now, we do carry several of Dr. Cuddy's books, Cover Up, Mental Health Screening, Road to Socialism, the timeline for the New World Order in Education, and we'll give you could certainly get one of our catalogs, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and look at the books we carry by Dr. Dennis Cuddy. They're all important. They will all help you understand what's going on today, because we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And there are really people out there who want to destroy it. And many of these are people of great wealth who are pushing communism and socialism. Communism and socialism just don't work. And they would have totally failed long ago had it not been for constant infusions of help and aid by people of great wealth. And that is especially true here in the United States, where the communist movement and the socialist movement have been largely funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, Ford Foundations, the same people who fund the Council on Foreign Relations. I know that to be true because I've been to the Council on Foreign Relations headquarters back in New York City many times, and of course all the people from the great foundations are there. But if you read the book, which we have kept in print for many years, Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Rennie Wormser, based upon the congressional investigations of the great tax-exempt foundations, that Foundations, Their Power and Influence, you'll find out that this is what the investigation by Congress found. The Rockefellers, the Fords, the Carnegie Foundations, funding communism and socialism in America and trying to destroy the love which every American should have for our way of life. So the only way you can really understand this, first of all, of course, is that if they can centralize all power in Washington, D.C., they can buy and sell the politicians. But first of all, they have to undermine the Constitution, which limits the power of government. And these people work as a conspiracy to prevent people from understanding the truth about freedom, that our freedom comes from God, that's why governments were instituted. And so we do hope that many of you out there will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, that you'll, of course, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You'll call us at 1-800-544-8927. Get Dennis's books, my books, with the Brotherhood of Darkness, and, of course, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and so many other things we carry. If you want a catalog or free newsletter, we'll be glad to send it to you. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if this country doesn't return to God, God is going to abandon America. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment for the next hour. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of a Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, for this hour, our guest is going to be Barrett Schoes. And Barrett is certainly one of our favorite guests. Barrett writes at crossroad.to. That's crossroad.to. Her articles are clear and concise and always provocative, and many times she writes at newswithviews.com, but I have not seen her article posted yet there on The Secret. And I think that The Secret is one of the most important movements that we've ever seen, and I have to ask myself, why at this time in history is there such an emphasis on The Secret? Now, The Secret has been out there from the beginning of recorded time, but it has already been cloaked in secrecy. It has never been something that they've wanted to tell the general public about until now. And at this time in history, as we seem to be moving towards World War III, as we're moving towards the collapse of the financial stability of this country, as we are increasingly moving away from being a Christian nation to a pagan nation, The Secret is being supported and being recommended by Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and so many people in key positions in television. And this is why I've asked Barrett to come on this evening and talk about this. Barrett, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. I'm just so glad we can discuss this, because it's just a very crucial topic, and we need to really understand what's going on, not just the book, The Secret, but the whole time scale and the setting today, because it makes sense why that it's coming out today, and yet so few people are ready for it.
All right, fine. Well, first of all, what is this? How can people understand how this fits in, why it's important, after all? Wouldn't we all want to know the secret to life and a better world and how we can improve our lot in life and how we could have money and how we could have prosperity and how we could have fame? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, and that's why the book is so popular, because it's presented, just as you said it, Dr. Stan, it's presented as a positive way, something we can do ourselves to change the world and to make ourselves rich, strong, able to attain. Well, let me just read some of the statements instead of just paraphrasing them, because it's really amazing. Here are just some of the promises in this little book by Rhoda Byrne, and she tells us, there isn't a single thing that you cannot do with this knowledge. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. The secret can give you whatever you want. The law of attraction, here's another statement, the law of attraction is the law of creation. You create your life through your thoughts. And a third statement, with this powerful knowledge, you can completely change every circumstance and event in your entire life. You know, when I read those, Dr. Stan, it reminded me of a scripture. Actually, it's repeated both in Matthew 4 and in Luke 4. And it's where the devil takes and leads Jesus up on the high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, all this authority I will give you. Therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours. And Jesus, of course, didn't fall for that temptation, and he said, get behind me, Satan.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Barrett Schoes. Well, Barrett, pick the story up there.
Well, I think it's interesting that particular example was given 2,000 years ago But the story that we're talking about, the secret we're talking about, goes back much further. But the scripture that was quoting Jesus and quoting the devil as Jesus was tempted could just as well be for our times. It could be from the beginning of time, because it's similar to what was going on back in the Garden of Eden when Satan, or the serpent, as he presented himself, was tempting Adam and Eve. Always sin through the flesh, through the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the desire to be wise and powerful and influential. And those are the same temptations that come through this new little book. And they're cloaked in such nice, friendly language. And they come at the time when the Western world, which 100 years ago, two centuries ago, pretty much, I think the Christian, the people who, well, whether they were born-again Christians or not, they lived in a culture where biblical truths were known. This couldn't have been presented at that time. It was underground, in fact, because we can go back. Let me now just start with what she starts the book with, so we can go from the beginning. When you open up the book and turn past the title page, you come to a page that features a particular quote. It's, "As above, so below." And it gives a source, the Emerald Tablet, about 3,000 years B.C. I'm familiar with that because it's the heart of occultism, of the ancient mystery religions, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and various other occult societies that we've heard about in the last two centuries. Aleister Crowley was a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and this particular statement, "As above, so below," is attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, for whom the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn is named. In fact, if you go to a particular page, which I have cited in the article, it includes this particular statement, explanation of "as above, so below." This phrase embraces the entire system of traditional and modern magic, which was inscribed upon a tablet in cryptic wording by Hermes Trismegistus. The significance of this phrase is that it's believed to hold the key to all mysteries. All systems of magic are claimed to function by this formula. That which is above is the same as that which is below.
And you hold that thought there, right?
Yes.
There. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Barrett Schultz. We're talking about The Secret. It's a little book that's just hit the market, and it's selling like hotcakes. There's this DVD you can get, and of course you can go up on the internet and just type in The Secret. They'll take you to their webpage, and it is so intriguing as you actually read about The Secret, because it offers you everything you ever wanted to have. And certainly with an endorsement from Oprah Winfrey, from Larry King, from leading people, many of the people you've probably heard of their books, a fellow who wrote the chicken books, the chicken soup books. He's made millions and millions of dollars, a chicken soup for the soul, things of that sort. And a number of names that you may very well recognize, some you won't recognize, all endorse this concept and tell you, this is the secret to wealth and riches. And of course, Barrett is pointing out that many of the ideas that are advocated in the book actually come from the ancient Hermetic mysteries, from the alchemists, and one of them is something called "as above, so below." In other words, as in heaven, here on earth. In fact, if you read the Bible, which Rick Warren advocates, which is called The Message, why, there in that they actually use this occult term. And the Lord's Prayer, "on earth as it is in heaven," their interpretation is "as above, so below." So you pick up the story there. I think it's so vitally important that to understand that there are two dimensions. So there is the dimension we live in and the other dimension. And in that other dimension, there are two forces. One is the God that we worship, and the other is the other God. Pick that story up.
Right. The difference, of course, is where we see two dimensions, that of the world where we read in, for example, Ephesians chapter 2, that Satan is the prince of this world. It's, you have the world system and you have God's eternity, which where everything is holy. This particular lie brings everything together. Let me just read another explanation of that phrase, as above, so below, which is the introductory phrase to the secret. And it states, the universe is the same as God. God is the same as man. Man is the same as the cell. Man is a counterpart of God on earth, as God is a counterpart in heaven. Therefore, it is a statement of ancient belief that man's action on earth parallel the actions of God in heaven. I'll read one more sentence and I'll stop. The purpose of all rituals and ceremonial magic is to unite the microcosm with the macrocosm to join God. It goes back to ancient Gnosticism, where the goal was to join in union with God, where there was a divine spark in every man and you had to release that spark so you could be one with God. It certainly goes back to Kabbalah. And if we have time, I could read some material from the and just compare Kabbalistic teaching. The Kabbalah became the foundation for the tarot card, which of course is used in Western occultism. But all of this now is presented in this beautiful package that looks so good, so enticing to the eyes, because the book is very attractive, a very pretty little book, full of wonderful promises that seem to fit right in with today's society. We've already moved a long way toward this idea of positive thinking. You mentioned Rick Warren earlier, but not only Rick Warren and the Emerging Church, Brian McLaren, John Maxwell, all are talking about positive, you know, give a positive presentation of truth. Make everything very positive so people will feel good, feel optimistic. And somehow that's the way to create peace and oneness. Don't deal with any other negatives. In fact, that's exactly what she says in, let me just read a statement from The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. She says, you don't want to sound negative, and quote, summoning what you want demands an intentional and selective focus only on what's positive. She says, the law of attraction doesn't compute don't or not or no or any other words of negation. Now, words of negation would be anything that had to do with sin or the cross or judgment or moral standards, which would say, no, you can't do anything you feel like doing. You can't have everything you want. If you're going to follow God and come close to God, you have to follow His way, not the way of the secret, not the way of ancient occultism. But what this does is it blinds people to biblical truth, to the nature of God, and to everything that He has taught us, because it just undermines it with something that feels so good, that's so enticing, and very few people are really able to truly resist it, because very few people now know God's word well enough to hold it up as a sword, as, you know, the sword of the Spirit, in the armor of God in Ephesians chapter 6, where it says, you take the sword of the Spirit, the word of God, so that you can quench everything that comes from the enemy.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is you watch the DVD, and I have to admit, I got the DVD and wanted to watch it. I wanted to know what people across America were learning. And what you are told here is if you want anything in the world, you want a relationship, you want money, you want a new sports car, you want a new boat, you want a new home, you begin to visualize this in your mind. It all has to do with your mind. And as some of the experts in this field will tell you, then you can begin to reorganize the universe. You can begin to reorganize the universe to provide what you want. And, you know, they show you the example of somebody who wants a sports car. And so he begins to sit in a chair. He imagines that he's driving the sports car. He holds his hands up in front of him as if he's driving the steering wheel. He reaches down with his, although I was a little disturbed, he was reaching down with his left hand and shifting the gears. So he must have been driving a European car rather than an American car, or at least an English car, because there the gear shift is on the left side rather than the right side. But And then the next thing you know, you see a picture of this same man in a sports car. The sports car has materialized, and it is his because he was able to visualize this in his mind and began to reorganize the universe along the lines that he wanted organized. And, you know, where do these ideas come from, Merritt?
Well, as I said, you know, it goes back again to, well, to the ancient mystery religions where, again, Satan had to deceive people into seeing this magical oneness that enabled the sorcerer or magician or alchemist to somehow conjure or create something in his mind, basically through the old, or through a special formula which was presented by Starhawk the Witch in her book, The Spiral Dance, probably about 15 years ago. She was the founder of the Covenant of the Goddess, and she said that to conjure or to do magic or cast spell involves four different aspects. Let me see if I can remember it. I don't have that in front of me, right? But I think it's relaxation, concentration, visualization, and mental projection.
And what we're really talking about is sort of this visualization. You begin to visualize the sports car.
Right.
Or you begin to visualize the house. But, Merritt, does this work? Can you really get some of these things that you want this way?
Well, you know, what we have seen in occult society, well, go back again to the days of Isaiah when you had that battle where Isaiah prayed against, no, it was Elijah, who Ahab had all these priests who were worshiping their Canaanite gods, and Jeremiah challenged them to, okay, I'm going to start a fire. Well, that's probably not a good example. Well, let's go back to Moses in Egypt, where Moses is at the court in Egypt seeing the Pharaoh, and Pharaoh calls on his magicians, court magicians, who were able to do all kinds of tricks. They too could create a serpent out of the staff and so on. You know, they could do magical tricks because they had learned the skills of sorcery. And what happens in this kind of occult magic is that when you call on those occult demonic deities where Satan stands behind, he's more than happy to do certain things in order to demonstrate his power. In fact, it fits right in with what the Bible tells us in 2 Thessalonians will happen in end times. Let me read the passage. It says, the coming of the lawless ones, because I think this is talking about something bigger and more occult, more demonstrations of occult magic than anything that anyone has seen in the past. It says, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who will perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them a strong delusion that they should believe the lie, and all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Now, here, Oprah Winfrey and Larry King, who promoted this book, are offering pleasure in unrighteousness.
But you know, of course, here in the DVD, why you have people who say, "Well, I begin to visualize $100,000. I wrote a check to myself for $100,000, and then I begin to focus on that $100,000, and in a certain period of time, the $100,000 came, and then I begin to visualize $1,000,000, and I wrote out a check to myself for $1,000,000, and I would keep concentrating on it. And after a time, the $1,000,000 came. That was, of course, the gentleman who wrote the book on the Chicken Soup for the Soul of books.
Was that Jack Canfield?
Right. And, of course, the thing is, I've talked to people who've been in the movement, and they've gotten these things that they concentrated on and visualized, but, of course, with a terrible, terrible price to pay.
Right.
Now you go ahead and pick up the story there, John.
Well, I think what you're describing is exactly what we're warned in 2 Thessalonians, that the lawless one will come with all power, signs, and lying wonders. He will do all kinds of tricks, more than was done at the court of the Pharaoh in Egypt back in the days of Moses, more than the magicians of Ahab who were working with the demonic forces through those Canaanite demons, and far more than the alchemists of medieval times, or even the sorcerers of today who are operating behind the scenes in their secret societies and so on. We're moving. Let me give another example. A few years ago, I had written one of my books had been published, and somebody up in Canada had read it. He was from Alberta, a very beautiful part of Canada, near, not too far, and he lived not too far from the American borders. But it was mountainous and beautiful, and many people from United States, women, would come up there to do spirit quests and sweat lodge ceremonies in order to make contact with their personal spirit guide. Now, we might cringe at this, but for those who had set aside biblical truth and had pursued feminist spirituality and various forms of New Age and occultism, this was a very exciting thing to do, very much a pleasing kind of temptation. And so they came up there, and he told me that for many years nothing would happen. They'd usually come up there, they'd do all those things, with large ceremonies, spirit quests, and so on, and they would meet their personal spirit guide. But he said, everything is changing. It's almost like a curtain that separated the occult from you know, our world, our Christianized society, is being taken away. And they're beginning to connect. In fact, most of them connect with their spirit guides, but not just one. They connect with many. And they start hearing all kinds of voices. They can't sleep at night. And they're in terrible shape. And they go to secular psychologists up here, and they don't know what's wrong. Some think it's multiple personalities. But he said, this is demonic. But what I'm giving this as an example that something is changing. I've written a number of articles on occult role-playing games, and you know, some that seem very innocent, such as Yu-Gi-Oh! And well, on anime as well. Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon, Dungeons and Dragons is not nearly as innocent, but there, and of course there are many others that I won't even mention. But people are writing to me. A number of especially young men have written and said, they can't sleep. They're really being tormented, but I pray for them that they might be set free. We're seeing Satan coming in and claiming his due, just as he said he would in that particular discussion, his temptation of Jesus. You know, fall down and worship me. That's the final, ultimate cost of dabbling in the occult and of believing these lies, such as this lie in the secret.
And because this is really what it's all about. I mean, you are actually beginning to open your mind. You're concentrating on getting these things, but, I mean, nothing comes without a cost. There's always a price to pay. And by visualizing these things, and these are standard occult techniques that are using, and indoctrinating literally millions of people in America today, and these occult concepts, these people are opening themselves up to demonic manifestations.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barrett Schoes, and we've been talking about these concepts that are described in the secret work. And I really fear that for many people they will. I've talked to people who've actually done this and, of course, have gotten tremendous benefits, and they thought that they'd found the answer to man's problems. I mean, why work for a living when you can simply just visualize what you want? You visualize $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, $1,000,000, and you may well get that. But there is a price to pay. And certainly the problem with any of these things is you are opening yourself up to demonic possessions. And certainly, Barrett, I'm sure you know Joanna Michelson, don't you?
Yes, in fact, she I haven't talked with her for many years, but I considered her a friend many years ago.
Well,
she would be today.
She's really a wonderful lady.
Yes,
we talk
is.
To her from time to time, and she's promised to come back on our programs here in about another month. She's having some personal things that are holding her up, but she'll be back with us again next month. But she was actually trained to be a psychic surgeon.
Right.
And she saw these truly miraculous things. I mean, supernatural things. People totally incapacitated. People stricken with cancer. People who had been left to die or told to go home and die by the doctors. And they were being cured by this psychic surgeon who could reach into the head and pull out the tumor. And she saw this with her own eyes. And she was just so amazed at the wonderful power that was being transferred to her. She was being trained to take over because she herself was a medium. And then, of course, the sudden horrible realization that this was all a manifestation of the demonic, because there is another dimension and you can tap into that world. But what is so frightening today, at this very time in history, that this movement is sweeping America, and millions of people are learning this secret that's been passed down through the ages of how you can contact the demonic beings and get this tremendous advantage, these tremendous benefits. So what are we going to do, Barrett? Most of these people have no idea. They don't understand what they're dabbling in or the terrible price that one day they will pay for the temporary advantages they're getting today.
Well, I think this is why it's so important that they can talk about it. And in a way, it's a real blessing that that it became a public issue because, as we said earlier, so much of this philosophy has been hidden underground. Now it's coming, it's coming into the open. And that's bad for those who are drawn into it, who are enticed by it, and who join the movement. It's very good for those who have eyes to see and are willing to heed the warnings that are behind this whole movement and take a stand. And I think it's so important that we share this with our children, because actually our children are going to face a far more of the onslaught of occultism that we're heading into. And if we don't help them to see what's going on, they're going to be in real trouble. They're going to have to take a stand that we didn't have to take. It's been easy for us in many ways to follow God, to embrace His truth, and to wear the armor, and to speak for what we believe. They're growing up in a society where very few, just a minority of children in public schools these days have the slightest concept of the spiritual battle between good and evil and between God and Satan. And so the first step would be to begin to warn them. But I thought, maybe we could go back just a little bit to Dr. Stan and just go through a little bit more of the immediate history, not for the last 200 years, because we'll see where it has come up and be able to maybe even, get a better handle on it when we see some of the other associations that have been preaching this message.
Go right ahead.
Well, I was thinking of, as far as the various people that Rhonda Byrne talks about as her masters, her guides, those, not spirit guides now, but those who helped her understand. And as you mentioned, Jack Canfield is among them. Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the Conversations with God books, horrible occult books that turn all of God's truth upside down, where God sets moral standards. Neil Donald Walsh just totally wipes them all out. Do anything you want, whatever you feel, whatever feels good to you is okay. In other words, again, the positive thinking, the focus needs to be on you and what you want, not on what anybody outside of you tell you.
And Chris, he is one of the advisors. Is he in the film, do you know?
Well, I didn't see the film. I just read the book.
All right, fine. Well, if he's talked about the book, I suspect he's in the film.
I suspect he is, too. I did an article. And
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan Backer of Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Barrett Chosen. And we're trying to give you the background of what this is all about. You've got to be out there. You out there in the listening audience, you've got to start telling people what this is about. There is a secret, it has been passed down for thousands of years through the secret and esoteric societies by the adepts and by, of course, the followers of the mystery religions. But what this is really all about, and by the very essence of the mystery religions, is that they believe there were two gods. One is the God that the Christians worship, and then the Jews worship, and the other is the real God. Now, of course, we would acknowledge that there is another force there. We would not say he's a God, we'd say he's Satan. But they believe that Satan is the good God, that we worship the bad God. And if you get in touch with Satan, just as Jesus has been promised all sorts of wonderful things on the Mount of Temptation, that if you get to you, you go along with the offer that Satan makes, you'll benefit tremendously, and you will. You can get all sorts of wealth and prosperity, but as with anything, there's a terrible price to pay. So you pick that story up there.
Right. There is a terrible price to pay. And again, as I said, I've been in contact with some of those who are paying that terrible price and who no longer have any peace of mind. They're tormented, literally day and night. They can't think clearly. I was just talking with one such person a few weeks ago, and I just weep inside because it's so horrible. I want to talk about just for a moment. But let me go back to something you just said, and I want to refer to Gnosticism, because among the various glimpses we've had of this philosophy coming out into the public arena in the last decade or so, of course, was Neil Donald's book, The Conversations with God, which became extremely popular. I remember one day standing in the bookstore at an airport, and a woman was reading that book, looking at it, wanting to buy it. And I asked her if she knew what that book was about. And she was a Christian, she told me. And she thought it was about God. And I explained to her that it was not, that it was an occult book. I mean, just turning all of God's word upside down, she was really surprised. She put the book down. I don't know. After I left, maybe she bought it anyway. I don't know.
Hold that thought, Barrett. We'll be back in just a moment here on Radio Liberty. Well, our guest this evening is Barrett Chosen. Before we go on with our discussion of The Secret, the book, the DVD, let me suggest that you want to get Barrett's material. Why, of course, it's available at crossroad.to. That's just crossroad.to. Or let's see, you spell that backwards, to the road to the cross, is that it?
Yes. T-O, the last part, as you said, stands for Tonga. So it's T-O at the end. But if you go backwards, it's to the road of the cross. Singular road. Crossroad.to.
All right, fine. To the road of the cross, and you'll find some wonderful things there. Barrett does have a wonderful book called The Brave New Schools. We actually carry that book. It's a takeoff on The Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, but we recommend the book very, very strongly. In fact, if you'd like to get a copy, you can always get it by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. We carry some of our other books. I think Twist of Faith, that was yours, wasn't it, Barrett?
Yes.
And Chris says
that actually deals with a lot. That has a lot of illustrations of what we're talking about as within the arena of feminist spirituality and witchcraft. Because I actually have talked and walked and had lunch with a number of witches, both male and female, as I was doing research for that book, and it was actually a mission field as well as an arena for research. So it's very interesting to see how many people who are involved in witchcraft are actually willing to look at Christianity. And then once their eyes are open, they're willing to turn away from witchcraft because they haven't found what they thought they were going to find. Many of them were actually very disillusioned.
I think they're just looking, and this is why we have to educate others so they can reach others with the truth.
Right.
I just noticed Twist of Faith. It doesn't look like we still carry it. Do you still have copies of that?
I will get you some.
All right, what for? And if you'd like
In
to...
In fact, if you want me to, I'll get some right away so that people can get it from you.
All right, fine. We'll appreciate that. God bless you. I appreciate it. And I think that do you have any other books that you'd like to mention before we go on?
No, that's fine. we'll go on. I do want to say, though, as far as before we leave Neil Donald Walsh and the Conversations with God, that we have an article on Indigo Children, which is just one of his many projects. He is very involved in various ways of publicizing his occult philosophies. We have more information, links from this particular article, A New Mask for an Ancient Secret, leads to a lot of information that is related to this book, The Secret, like Gnosticism and Kabbalah and alchemy and Rosicrucianism and New Thought, all of which come together. In fact, let me quote something from, I think, we don't hear much about the Rosicrucian mastery of life, but it's the philosophy is exactly like what we see in The Secret. And here's just a quote from a Rosicrucian website. It says, "Imagine having the ability to actualize your highest potential in all arenas of life, including family, social relationships, career, health, and personal development." And it says, much of it goes back to the mystery schools of ancient Egypt. You see, again, it's promising you can bring about, make all your wishes come true. Another statement, learn how to bring into physical manifestation a life you dreamed of, whether it's happiness and peace in your personal life or success in your business. The Rosicrucian studies give you specific knowledge. I'm not going to go any further because it's not very pleasant to read or hear, but I just want again to show you the parallel. It's almost identical in its presentation to what Rhonda Byrne writes in The Secret. And of course, Rosicrucianism is primarily Egyptian, based on Egyptian mysticism and mythology, or magical arts, I should say.
And for anybody, of course, here who would like to see this in engraved in stone, if you live in the Monterey Bay area, where I do, why, you can go to the San Jose area. There's a Rosicrucian temple over there. And, of course, you'll see all the Egyptian artifacts there surrounding it. And, of course, if you get into the whole really philosophy of Rosicrucianism, it's a continuation of the ancient mysteries, the Babylonian mysteries, the Egyptian mysteries, the mystery schools, as they were known to Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great, and then, of course, to the Gnostics and the Kabbalists and the Knights Templar and the Rosicrucians, and in modern times, of course, the Masonry and the Illuminati. So there's this continuity of these, the secret. But it was always how you were going to contact Lucifer. And he was going to give you your heart's desire, or you'll have the burning, what was it, the burning power, I think, of Lucifer in your hand. This tremendous personal power that you will have, but you don't want to access that, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
You do not under any circumstances, because it comes with a demon that will actually haunt you. And I've talked to people who have been haunted by these demons, and it is a terrible thing to contemplate.
Right, right. Maybe this would be a good time just to quote from Ephesians chapter 6 and just remind our listeners that the Bible tells us to be strong in the Lord and the power of His might, not in this occult might that we are offered. We're to put on the whole armor of God that we can stand against the wiles of the devil, because we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. And I should just mention, Dr. Stan, that I, in all those encounters that I described earlier, Well, there's and many, many more. God just taught me to wear the armor all the time. I would put it on first thing in the morning. I would rehearse it when I was out in any occult context. Can I just give one example of the victory you gave me one time?
You certainly can, Barry. Fortunately, we have no rules on this radio program.
Well, I'm just thinking of time because there's so much we could cover. But that might be a worthwhile illustration.
You were right ahead.
This is way back. I'm a nurse, and so I'd gone to a holistic... I'd gone to a continuing medication for nurses, and one of the offers was holistic health. And I, man, this is a long time ago, decades ago. And among the speakers were Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Symington, who came up with this visualized little bulldogs gobbling up your cancer cells and so on. Just a lot of occult stuff, but I was a brand new Christian, half a year or so, and I didn't know very much. And so I thought it was very interesting. One of the workshops that I went to was on polarity. Now, I didn't know what polarity is. I didn't know what the word meant even. And I had polio as a child, and my back is crooked, and I was paralyzed in both of my legs and so on. And God has, made me able to walk, but I still had problems in my back all the time. So I even, I had this uneasiness when she was saying she can fix just about any problem by balancing the masculine and feminine forces in the body. So I actually got on the phone, I called my husband, I said, can I sign up for this? And, for an appointment later on. And he said, sure, that would be good. So I did, and the day came and I had to drive across the bay to this appointment. I had put on the armor because both Andy and I were concerned about it. Drove into her office, lay down on her little massage couch, looked up, and here was this weird picture of sort of a line drawing of a head. When she came in, I asked her, what's that? And she said, well, that's my priest. And I said, you mean Catholic? And she said, no, that's my spirit guide. So I was I became very nervous at that point. I knew enough about occultism that I knew that wasn't very good. And I started praying what to do. And I asked her, well, what happens when you do the massage? And she said, well, I am connected to the universal force. That power comes into me through my spirit guide and then into my hands, and then it goes into you. And so I was ready to jump off the table at that point. But I was as if God was saying, just wait, I'm going to take care of you. And I put on the armor again, and as soon as she touched me, she started coughing, and she was coughing so hard that she couldn't continue to work, so she squatted on the floor. And I turned a few moments later, I just asked her, well, what are you doing down there? And she said, I'm realigning my energy. She had stopped coughing. And then she tried to touch me again, and as soon as she touched me, she started to cough. Then she became very angry, and she stepped back, and she said, my power won't go into you. You might as well go home.
And of course, people don't understand that if you know the Lord, you have that power, you have that protection. But if you don't have a personal relationship with the Lord, and you're out there, why, they're going to take you over. There really are demonic forces out there that are I think that somebody said, like prowling like a lion, in search of souls of men.
Right.
A hungry lion, as I remember.
Yes, yes. It's actually in 1 Peter chapter 5. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith. And that's the key. We have to be steadfast in the faith. And that means knowing God's word well enough that we will quickly recognize, and walking with him closely enough that we will sense, we will hear his warnings in our mind and our heart, so that we will not be drawn to it. And this is what we need to build into our children. And actually, this is what the armor of God is all about. It's intimacy with God, because he is the armor. He is the truth. He is the righteousness. He is the peace. He is our salvation. He's every part of the armor. And so we have two sections on our website, On the Armor, both the Bible study book, which is online, On the Armor, and also a section for children to teach children to put on the armor. It's basically just knowing. It's not visualizing in Roman armor and the helmet and so on at all. It's taking a hold with your mind and heart of the various parts. You know, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, and all the different parts, and wearing those, taking the scriptures that go with them. And then you can stand, then you'll discern, and then you will enjoy the victory that he gives us because we're hidden in him.
And I think, of course, unless you have the armor of God today, you're going to be taken over by the other side. Let me just briefly read something from Barrett's paper here. This was the introduction on the Oprah Winfrey Show to The Secret. Fragments of a great secret have been found in the oral traditions and literature and religious and philosophies down through the centuries. But for the first time, all the pieces of the secret come together in an incredible revelation that will be a life-transforming for all of you who experience it. In this book, you'll learn how to use the secret in every aspect of your life. Money, health, relationships, happiness, and in every interaction you have here in this world. You'll begin to understand the hidden, untapped power that's within you. And this revelation can bring joy in every aspect of your life. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, is the devil's lie. There's nothing within us, of course, that offers anything at all. As we begin looking inside of ourselves, we will find the very evil nature that is the very nature of mankind. It is only upon with our reliance upon our Lord Jesus Christ that we have any hope of salvation or survival in this great spiritual battle that is being fought today for the souls of men. And they certainly are out there today. I think more so, I mean, this is not the world we lived in 20 years ago. This is an entirely new world, and they've unleashed these devilish and demonic forces. They are literally everywhere. They're in our music, they're within our television, within the motion picture industry, they're within our schools, and they're even within our churches. We find the head of the Southern Baptist Convention, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the man that Time Magazine picked to be America's pastor, Rick Warren, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the foundation of that organization is in the occult. And, of course, their goal, their stated goal, is to bring the kingdom of God to earth. But what God is the question?
And to unite, and eventually to kind of unite, to cause people to think they're both the same.
Right.
That they fit together. It's that oneness, the monism again. All is one. The universe is the same as God. God is the same as man. Man's actions will bring about results in the heavenly places. You know, and it's such a lie. But it sounds so good. It's so titillating through the senses of man.
And, of course, they really claim that there is this this force out there that you can tap into. And once you tap into that force, you have the ability to rearrange the universe. Ladies and gentlemen, you and I have no force at all. And if we reach out to this force, what we're really doing is bringing the demonic force into our lives. And once you do, your life will never be the same. Unless, of course, you're fortunate enough to learn to renounce it and to turn back to God, because there is no neutral ground in this battle. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And not only does it affect individuals, it affects, I believe, that this is something that happens, you know, within a nation too. Let me just read this. I'll read Deuteronomy 8, because I think the verses between 10 and 20 are so important. I'm just going to take a few of the verses, but it's God warned his people, and I think this warning is for us as well, because in 1 Corinthians, the New Testament, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he tells us that what happened to them in the Old Testament days will also happen to us if we sin as they do. And here's the Old Testament warning. When you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God, you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gained me this wealth. If you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, you will surely perish. As other nations which the Lord destroyed before you, you shall perish. And we need, we just need to understand that in the Old Testament, God withdrew his protection. And I think that's one reason why this man up in Alberta, Canada said, they didn't used to be able to connect with the forces of evil. Now it's so easy. It happens all the time.
And I think we are seeing God removing his protection from our country. Can the trend be reversed? It would take a major revival in this country. I don't see any of our religious leaders rising to that occasion. They're all going along with what's happening. After all, that's the road to prosperity and fame. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with Barrett Schultz. Well, Barrett, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, you know, I think as we talk about this, Dr. Stan, I want to make sure, I'm sure this is frightening to many of our listeners, and I don't want it to be. I think, you know, in some ways, Dr. Stan, it is good that we come to the point where we see that we have to take a stand. We just can't slide with culture. We can't go out there and become an accommodate culture. We have to take a stand and then pray that we will still demonstrate God's love every place we go. The first scripture that I memorized when I was a new Christian back in the 70s, a long time ago, and it was really hard. I didn't have a good memory. I've been practicing memorizing lots of scriptures since then. But it was Joshua 1:9, be strong and of good courage. Be not frightened, neither be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. That's Joshua 1:9. And it's such a wonderful reminder. And I think that it's almost as sometimes when you see the darkness, you take a realistic look at the darkness, not denying it, and you begin to see the light of God and his love and how blessed we are to belong to him at a time like this. It's a little bit like going up into the mountains, you know, Dr. Stan, and you can see the stars in the sky. Oh, it's just amazing against the blackness where it isn't deluded by the lights of the city. Isn't that true? And
it,
I think it's
is.
A little bit like that. The wonders of God become so great and so wonderful when we realize how blessed we are to have been saved out of all of this darkness. And that's what he has done for those who have put their faith in him. And we can look at it and not be afraid, because our lives are hidden in him forever.
And I think what people are going to have to recognize is there is no neutral position. I mean,
yes.
You know, what it says someplace in the gospel, you're either with us or against us, or words to that effect. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you're either going to have to stand on God's side or of course you're going to be on the other side.
Yes.
And let me hope that people will listen to these programs and decide whose side they want to be on. And it's as simple as simply asking God to come in and take control of your heart and really mean it. Really mean that, of course, you realize that you can't stand against these forces of darkness on your own. Nobody can. It's only the strength of the Holy Spirit indwelling you that will give you the opportunity, the ability to withstand in times like this. Barrett Schultz, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney, we hope you enjoyed our conversation with Barrett. This is such an important issue, and literally millions of souls here in America and throughout the world are on the chopping block. They're going to be either swept up into this truly demonic world that is being advocated by the people like Oprah Winfrey and Larry King, or they're going to draw closer to God. And our job is to try to bring them to God, and using your help and the help of others, we are truly involved in a spiritual battle. And one side or the other side is going to win. And the fact that this is happening at this time in history, as we're moving, what I believe, towards World War III, as we're moving towards a financial collapse here in the United States, as we're moving as a nation further and further away from the teachings and the acceptance of God and God's Word. I mean, we're heading towards the climax, ultimate climax of history, and you're going to have to decide whose side you're on, and I hope it'll be on the Lord's side. So let me suggest you perhaps get Barrett's books, Twist of Faith, and she's going to make them available to us again, or her book, The Brave New Schools. You certainly need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our four tape sets on the supernatural, our interviews with Joanna Michelson. You need to get our four tape sets on Satanism and deliverance. You need to get a copy of this talk on the secret, and the one we had, I think it was last night or the night before, as we go into the background of this movement that is sweeping America. And then, of course, we hope that you'll be able to utilize this information to help others understand that there really are these truly demonic forces out there. If you've never seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3 hour, the 4 hour, the 10 hour. I believe no place would these videos be more important than right now to get and to show, to utilize them, to show how so many people in the music industry have frankly gone over to the demonic side for the great advantage that they have, but of course at the price of their eternal soul. Because so many of these people in the music industry, whether it be the Beatles or so many of the other groups, you know, have actually had great prosperity and wealth and, of course, fame, and they've died young. Because, you see, the devil does expect you to pay back. And once, of course, you have gone over, once you die, there's no turning back. There's no second chance. And any one of us could die tonight, tomorrow. And I would ask each one of you, if you were to die tonight, where would you spend eternity? And if you were to stand before the gates of heaven, and you were to ask, why should I be admitted? What would your answer be? I mean, that you've been a good person, or any of us truly good? Well, that's a question that you are going to have to answer yourself, but I know that I could never qualify to get in on my own. It is only because we have a Savior, and that was Jesus Christ, that we have any hope of eternal salvation. And that's the promise of Christianity, that through our Lord Jesus Christ, why we can gain admission to heaven. So we do hope that many of you, of course, will get our material, get those videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Certainly, I think Schimmel's other DVD, The Da Vinci Con, DVDs that are put out by Chris Pinto on Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, his Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and now next week we'll have his new one. I believe it's engraved in stone or written in stone. This is all going to point you to an understanding of the true spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. So we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, and for our provision and protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and our webpage, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the internet. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.